So this whole concept of love of God was through people who manifested his qualities of magnanimity, of trust, of nobility, of honesty, of integrity, of love for everybody.
On In Good Faith, we believe that all faith traditions have something to teach us about how God is working in the world and in our lives. So join us as we listen and learn. Today on In Good Faith, we are starting the first of what will be a few episodes, a little mini-series, if you will, on the love of God, how people experience that personally. I'm so happy to be in studio today with senior producer Heather Bigley. Welcome, Heather.
Hello.
And also with producer Leah King.
Hello, glad to be back.
So I thought it would be really good to dig into both what it's like to love God, to receive love from God, and what it's like to love your neighbor, and maybe even a little bit of how to love yourself if we haven't had that experience. We have Kevin Guela, really bright and articulate, and I would say loving.
Kevin Guela is a licensed marriage, family, and child therapist. She's faculty of continued education at Claremont Graduate University, and she's the founder and executive director of Center for Global Integrated Education, which is a nonprofit Baha'i-inspired education organization. And we have another podcaster. This time, though, she's the producer and host of a Persian language podcast for the SoCal Iranian community. She's going to reference some of the brutality that her faith community has received at the hands of the Iranian government.
And to my amazement, she has a type of vitality and enthusiasm for life that has not in any way been quenched by the difficulties of life. We started off talking with her about experiencing God's love.
The thing that keeps coming back to me was the way I was loved by others. Because in the Baha'i concept of love, Baha'u'llah says, love me that I may love thee. If thou lovest me not, my love can in no wise reach thee. This is in the hidden words of Baha'u'llah. Basically, it is my choice. I need to take the first step to love God. And then the question becomes, how do I love God? And then the question is, how do I feel loved by God? I think probably the most I remember is the way people around me were allowed and encouraged to love each other and then to love me, and to there would be no limit to it. My father especially, I think, was probably most significant in that way, because he came from a family. His father embraced the Baha'i faith, and then he was killed when my father was, the oldest child was 11, and my grandmother had 5 kids, and the youngest one was an infant. But I never saw my father being bitter about it. He was very, very devoted and very knowledgeable. In fact, I know that in his youth, he was a teacher in one of the many schools that the Baha'i community created in Iran, and especially the schools for women were first created by the Baha'i community in Iran. My teachers in school were all educated in these schools. It was very interesting. And so my father had this attitude that when I got ready to go to elementary school, he decided I go to a Zoroastrian school.
Interesting.
For elementary school, I was in the Zoroastrian school and also half of high school. And in that school, there were a lot of people from all backgrounds, Muslim, Zoroastrian, and Armenian. And my closest friend was an Armenian girl. So this whole notion of being able to have no limits of who I can love and who can love me and how we relate was, for me, very liberating and almost like revolutionary, because I live in a country where you could not even associate with anybody outside of your faith or outside of your own particular group. It was very small group oriented or family oriented or tribal mentality, basically. So that to me was from the very beginning was liberating. Of course, I was also attending the Baha'i school, Baha'i children classes on Fridays, which was in somebody's house. And that was interesting. And a teacher would come and teach us about how to be Baha'is, basically how to behave, what is the characters of a Baha'i child, which was very uplifting, like being kind and being generous and being joyful and being curious. The curious part was my most favorite. Basically, ask questions as much as you want and be part of nature. And my father would plant with me every morning. He would come into the yard and he would plant with me vegetables and tend to them. And so I learned the love of plants and nature in relation to being God-loving from him. So, yeah, the environment that I was raised, very unique in Iran in that time, basically gave me this courage, I guess, to be bold, to be asking questions, to want to know. And to me, that was really knowing and loving. You know, Baha'u'llah says the two purposes we have here, to know and to love. So knowing was very encouraged. And of course, as a result, I felt loved.
I'm wondering about whether it happened as a smaller child or as you were growing, how you developed what might feel like a relationship with God, or when you first realized that God was part of the world and part of your life.
You know, I think my father probably was the initial person, because he is a scholarly Baha'i. He's had a very dramatic experience as a Baha'i when his father was killed, and all his their possessions were taken. My grandmother had to take care of the business of the family, raising the family. But I remember that there was a tablet from Abdu'l-Bahá to my family, assigning a very distinguished Baha'i to take care of the affairs of my grandmother, because she, in Iran, women could not even go outside to shop for themselves. So somebody had to make sure that they take care of her and the five children. So my grandmother was taken care of. To me, that was love. Our family was not left to themselves. So it was all around, by the way people would walk in and associate with us. We go to visit them. And then the Baha'i Center was not that far from our house, within walking distance. So I would walk over there with a whole bunch of other kids in the neighborhood. Some of them were Baha'is. And there was swings in there. And then there was little tadpoles in the pool, and we would play with it. And there were classes in there. There were people coming and going. I felt very, very safe, and I guess very, very loved.
Well, that's really beautiful that you could extrapolate from the love of the people around you that was God's love coming to you through them.
Yeah, the Baha'i concept of love, and I continue to learn about it. So this whole concept of love of God was through people who manifested his qualities, qualities of magnanimity, of trust, of nobility, of honesty, of integrity, of love for everybody. You know, my family, some of them were Baha'is and some of them were Muslims. Some of them were Jews. But when we got together, we all cared for each other, and we discussed matters. We did not shy away from talking about difficult subjects. So to me, it was like, there was no reason for me to feel other ways.
As a counselor, do you see people who shut out love?
Yeah.
Maybe we all do in some ways. I would love to feel more of the love of God.
You know, I do see a lot, but it starts with shutting other people first. You, mm-hmm. For example, if you consider a whole class of people because of their religion, because of their race, because of their economic status, if you see them as others, basically, you're not being godlike, because these are all God's creation. So how in the world can you love his creation if you're putting a wall between yourself and some others? So the first thing, if I want to teach, even in the public schools, if I want to teach something about being spiritual, it's about being godlike. It's, you need to be able to see the good in everybody. There is a good in everybody, something is good. And that's what Baha'u'llah says. He says in that the same hidden words, he says, hear no evil, see no evil. Basically, it's a choice. It's not that there is no evil. It's that you choose not to see it. You choose to see positive. Now, I remember my son was 5 years old, and I had told him that. And so Abdu'l-Bahá says, if somebody has 9 good qualities and 1 bad, just focus on that 9 good one. And then somebody has 9 bad qualities and 1 good, just focus on that 1 good one. He liked that. It gives you a feeling of love as a child. So one day he was just climbing up the counter in the kitchen, and I come and see him, his hand in the cookie jar, and I go at him like, you don't know what you're doing. How dare you do that? Who told you to climb up? And then he climbed down and he was very calm and he looked at me and he said, huh, look at you. Didn't you say that if we have 1 good quality and 9 bad, you focus on that 1 good, and here you are focusing on my bad quality? Didn't Abdu'l-Bahá say that? And I said to myself, oh my goodness. You know, if I take this Abdu'l-Bahá from him right now, if I undermine his saying and make myself right, he would lose his whole faith to the teachings of God about humanity. So I told him, you are so right, Nason. I'm so sorry. You're so right. I should have not.
That's very humble of you to be able to do that.
Well, you know, as a parent, you're responsible to bring your children to the truth, right? And I cannot be claiming it and then doing it otherwise. He would not respect me, you know? Just like I respected my father because he lived it. I remember he's coming home when I was 2.5. He's coming home bloody, you know? And I know that this happened in the Persian Bazaar because there were all kinds of different people. Because of your being a Baha'i, even being a Jewish background, all of that might be the cause of you getting beaten up. But my father was never bitter, and he was never a victim. Basically, he said, people, they don't understand. So you just have to make up for the fact that not everybody understands. So we have to understand, and we need to make sure we educate ourselves so we don't become the cause of hurt and agony to other people. Because Baha'u'llah looks so much, he says, beware, lest ye offend anyone. And then he says, beware, lest ye be offended. You take responsibility for not being offended and not offending anyone. So that to me is about really the way we feel love. Otherwise, what is it? I mean, do you expect some force to come and show you, hug you or something like that? I don't think that's how it is. I think it's understanding through science and also through the teachings of the faith that this creation has order in it, and it's governed by certain rules that will never be changed just because you don't believe in it, like the law of gravity, you know?
This is In Good Faith. I'm Stephen Capp Perry. I'm Stephen Capp Perry, host of the In Good Faith podcast, and I want to tell you about another in our family of BYU radio podcasts, an award-winning show with an award-winning host. This is Julie Rose on Top of Mind. Do you get turned off by the news because of how angry and polarizing and even depressing it can be? Doesn't anybody know how to have a civil conversation or weigh two competing ideas without a knee-jerk reaction that if you don't think what I think, you're a bad person? Check out the podcast, Top of Mind. They take one tough topic and they dive deep. And the goal is learning how to stay open and curious, even when you're confronted with different perspectives that may challenge us. Learning how to stick with the discomfort until we feel like we've actually learned and gotten some understanding. We may change our minds, we may not, but every episode will leave you feeling hopeful and empowered to become a better advocate for what does matter to you. Top of Mind, listen to the podcast wherever you get your podcasts. This is In Good Faith with more of Kevin Guela, host of Transforming Human Consciousness, which you can find on YouTube. Education is something you've really dedicated your life to, and that is one of the aspects of Baha'i belief, is education and knowledge. Why do you think that is? Why was that important to come through Baha'u'llah to the believers?
I think, when looking back, I think there are two ways to know ourselves, basically. When we interact with the living world, that's one way of knowing ourselves. Like you climb a high, steep mountain, you learn about yourself. You learn, you know, how able you are, how afraid you are. And you learn when you're climbing it with others, are they helpful? Are they attending? Are we laughing? Are we enjoying the scenery? Nature is God's creation. So that's one of the ways we relate to God, to nature. My father taught me that. And I love the metaphors in nature that is in the Baha'i writings. And for example, one of the children prayers says, "Oh God, educate these children. These children are the plants of thine orchard, the flowers of thy meadow, the roses of thy garden. Let thy love rain upon them. Let the sun of reality shine upon them with thy love. Let thy breeze refresh them, in order that they may grow, develop, and appear in the utmost beauty." To me, this relationship explains the relationship of education, of my growing and God. And the rain helps me, the sunshine helps me, the plants help me. I look in every one of them and I see aspects of divine sacrifice, for example. As Abdu'l-Bahá says, there are two ways you do sacrifice. One is the example of the seed. The seed goes into the dirt and it disappears. It dies, but an oak tree comes out as a result. And that is a sacrifice of the seed. But the seed cannot choose to sacrifice itself, right? But human beings do choose. So for us, it's a choice. And then he said the other example that I always love is the example of iron. Iron loses all its attributes when it goes into fire and becomes fire. It becomes, if it is cold, it becomes hot. If it is dark, it becomes glowing red. And if it is solid, it becomes melted. And I'm always fascinated with this, that in my relationship with God, I'm going to have to give up some things and then change for becoming godlike. So how do I become godlike? And it was nearness is likeness, as Abdu'l-Bahá said. So then we had to Abdu'l-Bahá, an example of Abdu'l-Bahá, which stories all children learn, how he was in prison, but yet he was always joyful. He was always thinking about the rest of the world. And he said he was never in prison, because the only prison is the prison of self. So that was fascinating for me. And that's maybe because of that I became a psychotherapist. How do you get out of the prison of your own self?
Kevin, I'm curious, because you have enough life to have been on a faith journey and experienced different stages of life. How is your relationship with God now different than when you were younger, or even 20 years ago or 10 years ago? Has something changed or deepened?
I think the one thing that has become deeper and deeper, I have a lot deeper understanding of the concept that the heart that has fear in it, love cannot be in it. And at the same time, having the fear of God, have a deeper understanding of fear of God. It's not the God that will punish me, it's not the God who's random, and it's not kind of a God that is unpredictable, but it is about his laws, deeper understanding of his laws pertaining to human relationship, pertaining to my relationship with God, and appreciating that there is this universe has a creator, that everything in it is under its loving shadow. So for me, watching animal shows and wondering about the way the whole creation is created is a lot more appreciated than ever I was when I was young, and of course also appreciation of the sacrifices of the Baha'is of Iran. I don't get mad at it. I don't get upset. I'm in awe. I give you a story. So just a few days ago, one of the Baha'is, a woman, her husband was executed many years ago when her children were young, and she raised them by herself. Then her sons got married, and the daughter-in-law was put in prison, and then she died, and she continued taking care of the grandchildren. And a week ago, her son, one of them, went to Canada to study mediation and negotiation, so be about peace in Iran, and went back to Iran to serve the community because the Baha'is in Iran cannot administrate the people who are other, like other parts of the world, the National Spiritual Assembly in the United States or local spiritual assemblies all over the world. They cannot have it. So anyways, so he was in prison again for the second time, the son. So she died. And the practice right now in Iran is they will not allow the Baha'is to be buried like the way we have in our faith, that, you know, the body is need to be revered, clothed in the natural material. There is a special prayer that is supposed to be said for the dead, and then reverently putting them in a casket made out of a natural material, not any artificial material, because supposed to the ground and disintegrate. The Baha'is don't burn the body because Abdul Baha teaches that this is not good for the atmosphere, for the nature. But so gradual disintegration is the way. But they will not let that. But now the government is absolutely showing its wrath and anger and prejudice in subjecting the people who die into being thrown in places with a mass grave. And Baha'is are so torn. At the same one time, they're supposed to be obedient to the government, but at the same time, this government is absolutely cruel and unjust. And so this grandmother who died, they wanted to do the same thing. And the family and the sons, they sat down and they consulted, what do we do? And this is what they decided. They're going to donate the body of their mother to the science. So the university will have the body and will benefit from learning from her body. And I thought, this is what Abdu'l-Bahá taught us, that tests are stumbling blocks or stepping stones as you make them. So they put a test in front of you. You got to find how to make it a stepping stone, because you cannot become angry. But my goodness, I mean, my reverence and my respect and my awe about these children who decided to let go of the body of their mother for something more instead of, okay, we want to bury. So never becoming bitter, never becoming angry, never becoming violent. Never the Baha'is of Iran have done that. To me, that is godlike. I mean, that's how God is. Loving under all circumstances and teaching and guiding and being an example. I would not be able to do when I was younger, I'm sure.
Yeah. I wrote down what I think you said, the heart that has fear in it, God cannot be in it.
Actually, I want to read to you the exact quotation. This is from Baha'u'llah. It says, love is a light that never dwelleth in a heart possessed by fear. This is from Baha'u'llah, the four valleys. Love is a light that never dwelleth in a heart possessed by fear. So as parents, we don't want to put fear in our children's heart. But at the same time, if you look at nature, look at the powers, you're in awe. So the fear of God to me is awe, the sense of awe, which has been very present in the Baha'i writings in relation to God. It's not the kind of fear that is a petty or something like that, but it's awesome.
That was Kevin Guela, licensed marriage, family, and child therapist, also a podcaster in a Persian language podcast, and she's a member of the Baha'i faith. I really loved when she talked about seeing God's love as a very young child when her grandfather was killed, and just she saw God's love in all of the people from her community that showed up to take care of them. And no one had to explain to her that that was God's love. She just understood it and got it.
Yeah, that's a very concrete interpretation of God's love. And I love that she simplified it to that level, because in my tradition, something where someone is stepping in would be seen as a tender mercy of the Lord, and he's placing his hand in your life, intervening in a positive way. But she simplifies that to the word love, and I've never thought about it like that, and I think going forward, I will, because of what she said.
And what a wonderful reminder to all of us, right, that we are God's hands in everybody's lives, and the way we treat people is going to impact whether or not they believe in God, ultimately.
It really could.
Yeah.
It really could. And she says, to know and to love. These are God's purposes for us. I wrote that down because to know God, to love God, to know each other, to love each other. That was pretty simply encapsulated. But the thing that really struck me was she said, if you see other people as other, then you're shutting yourself off from them, and you are thereby shutting yourself off from God.
That reminds me, Steve, of the Us Versus Them panel, which is episode 157. Talks about how we can overcome those barriers kind of and work together in our faith.
So we are talking in the next several episodes about the love of God, both the love we feel for and from God, as well as how we share that with other people. So I hope you'll stay with us on this journey for a couple of episodes. This episode was produced by Heather Bigley. Our production team includes Leah King, Katarina Martinich, Josh Orton, and Ashton Rowan. Our post-production sound engineers are Mark Hansen, Brandon Lewis, Daniel Phillips, and Carly Wilson. Here at In Good Faith, we're committed to the idea that we all benefit from hearing people of widely varying backgrounds share their personal experience with faith and belief. In fact, we think people with such experience deserve some of our best listening. Help spread the word by leaving a comment or a review on YouTube, Spotify, Apple, wherever you get your podcasts. Find us on Twitter at InGoodFaithPod. Instagram and Facebook are InGoodFaithPodcast. And we have a YouTube channel, youtube.com/in-good-faith. In Good Faith is a production of BYU Radio. I'm Stephen Cap Perry. I hope you join me again soon, right here in Good Faith.